All knowledge was revealed. It wasn't discovered. So, indeed, I consider this a great success. Maybe we can't learn everything, but there's so much we could.
We've also heard in the show about the role of skepticism, not only within science itself, but within those claims of science that turn out to be junk science or pseudoscience.
It sounds to me like skepticism is a good trait to have.
At least it's a good theme for a radio show. And we would like to thank our production team, to which we are double blind certain. We owe our gratitude, Gary Niederhoff and Barbara Vance.
And special guest stars in this episode, Gabriel Alvarado and Debbie Collier. Financial support from Google, also Rena Shulsky, David and Sammy David, and the NASA Astrobiology Institute. Big Picture Science is produced at the SETI Institute. And a big thanks also to our listeners.
And those listeners' ears have been attuned to Skeptic Check. Check the skeptics. Or have they? If you're not sure that that's accurate, good for you. Double check by going to our website and listening again. We also have an archive of Big Picture Science episodes, including Skeptic Check. But don't take our word for it. Check out the veracity of that statement at the same website, bigpicturescience.org. And while you're online doing all of that, why not save yourself the time it takes to do multiple clicks and download the Big Picture Science app? You can find it on iTunes, Android, and Windows 8. Plus, you can get the show on Stitcher.
And if you're a podcast listener, but you prefer over-the-air radio because it feels more reliable, check out the listing on our website of radio stations that carry the program. And if your local station is not on that list, well, consider letting them know you like the show. Oh, and do you have a comment, a criticism, or a suggestion, or possibly even praise? Well, write us at bigpicturescience@seti.org.
Ooh!
Skeptic Check is brought to you thanks to a generous grant from the Trimberger Family Foundation. At the Trimberger Family Foundation, we hold that skepticism is a lamp that lights the way to truth. Trimberger.org.
Yo, what up, though? This is Jay Retch, and you're tuned in to WHFR Dearborn.
The following program has been pre-recorded. The views expressed by the participants are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio or Henry Ford College. Welcome to We Are Not Alone. We're local investigators, as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists, share their latest evidence in support of the UFO reality. I'm David Twitchell, and you're listening to WHFR Dearborn. WHFR.fm is the station making waves, and for the next hour, we will be exploring the mysteries of the UFO and abduction phenomenon. And our guest today is Reuben Langdon. Reuben is a Los Angeles-based actor, filmmaker, truth seeker, and one of Hollywood's and Asia's most sought-after martial art stuntmen. He has worked alongside some of the most recognizable names in action films, to include Jackie Chan. And more recently, he played an alien in the Hollywood blockbuster Avatar. In April and May of 2013, Reuben produced the citizens' hearing on disclosure that brought together 40 witnesses from 10 different countries to testify in front of 6 former members of U.S. Congress on the fact that the world is being engaged by extraterrestrials. He has recently produced a documentary entitled Interviews with ED, Extra Dimensionals, where he interviews several individuals who claim to be able to telepathically channel beings from other worlds. And so let's welcome Reuben Langdon to the show. Hello, Reuben.
Hi, Dave. How's it going?
It is going well. How's it going with yourself?
Very good. Thanks for having me on.
Very, very good. Yeah, I saw...
Yeah,
Go ahead.
It's a subject matter I'm very passionate about. So any opportunity to speak about it and share is very welcome in my book. So thank you.
Hey, no problem. You know, I've watched the movie Avatar about four times now.
Oh, great.
I love it, especially the flying scenes.
I had a huge part of those scenes.
Did you?
So my I guess my main role in that film was the body double, physical stunt double for the main character, Jake Sully. So whenever he was, it was all done through motion capture technology. So whenever the worker, Sam Worthington, was the main actor, I should say, whenever he was doing anything crazy physical, falling off the horses or running through the woods from the Thanador, or the flying scenes when he's learning how to fly his Banshee. And that was mostly me, my physical movements. And then they took his facial expressions and digitally connected them. And
wow,
that's how movies are made these days.
Well, certainly. And you were, as you were falling off of the Banshee, right down to the, through the, through all the foliage, down to the ground, you probably weren't 2 feet off the ground, right?
Well, I was a little more than 2 feet, but it was not that high, actually. It was all done in a soundstage, and instead of hitting foliage, I would hit giant foam pads. So it wasn't as violent, as painful as it looks on the film, but it definitely... Now, I was bouncing around. My body was bouncing around from one pad to the next.
Now, Ruben, you just ruined it for me. I thought you were really falling from the sky over there.
No, unfortunately. I wish I could put that one on my resume, but...
just fell from the sky from a Banshee. You know? Yeah, we want
to probably wouldn't be able to live to tell that.
I wondered how that Navi lived. It's Navi, right?
Yes, the Navi and James Cameron Avatar. It was an amazing experience. I had such a wonderful time. It actually was about 4 years. Now, it wasn't a full 4 years of constant work, but we had about a year straight, and then it was sort of on and off for the remainder 3 years. It was, a day here, a day there, a couple times a week, maybe a week, a month. So, but it was a long process. Very long.
Okay, was it all on a soundstage? Were you outside? I remember you told me something about going to Brazil.
No, I know James Cameron and some of the actors had gone to Brazil to do some work, I guess, more training and to be in the Amazon and work with some native Amazonians. Some tribes,
right.
They would go on hikes and really connect with the earth to sort of get that, the Navi, that was their sort of archetype. Their characters were based off of the natives, different native cultures throughout our world. And I remember through our world, Earth, and I remember Cameron we had pictures like in the studio where we're doing the motion capture. We had just walls covered with different pictures and clothing styles from all these different native cultures from around the world. And that was really representative. It was kind of a mix match of all these different native cultures was what the Navi ended up being. It wasn't one specific culture, but a mix match of African and South American, Native American, and even Asian cultures.
That is interesting fact. Are they planning Avatar 2?
Oh yeah, they're doing 2, 3, and 4.
Are you kidding?
It's been in writing, but they've been in the planning stages for several years now, and it's as far as I know, it's greenlit. It's full steam ahead. The only thing is they haven't got their script sorted out, so I'm waiting for that call.
I was going to say, have they tapped you for the sequels?
There was discussions actually a couple of years ago. Cameron had a sort of a cast and crew party after the movie had already come out, and it was successful, and I guess it was sort of the announcement that he was going to do a sequel and he wanted the old crew back. So we all felt really special, and we were all like, yes, we're going to have employment for the next few years. But that was almost 3 years ago when he had that party. So we're all just still in limbo, like, is this really happening? What's going on here?
Yeah, well, I guess it takes a lot of time. But, they should hire you again because you fall from a banshee really well.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, no, I love it. And I do hope to rejoin with the sequel. I'm sort of fingers crossed. And,
right.
It was just a phenomenal experience. And it sort of is what triggered me and led me into this, to my work in ufology. Mm-hmm. And during my time working at Avatar, I had an experience. I should say not on set, but I was at home one day, one of the few days we had off in the middle of the week, and I saw a number of disc-like objects in the sky in Glendale, California, of all places.
Okay.
And it blew my mind, and that sort of was the catalyst to really open me up. I guess that in conjunction with the Avatar experience, you know, playing an alien.
Interesting.
Learning these native ways, these culture, you know, how native cultures sort of operated and did things. And
you're sure they weren't making a movie?
Oh, you mean the having the system? Okay.
Yeah.
No, that's quite possible. I will not take that one out of the consideration. However,
I think you'd know the difference.
Yeah, these discs. What happened is I saw about 30 or 40 little. They were very tiny, and they were way high up in the air, but they were in a patch of the sky. Clear blue sky and a cloud in the sky. And they sort of look like stars, really bright stars.
Okay.
But in the middle of the day, and I was like, how is this even, if those are stars, how is this conceptually, how does this even happen? Is it possible? Can stars be so bright that you see them in the day? And then I sort of came to the conclusion in real time, in the moment, that this is extraterrestrial. This is out of this world because I've seen nothing like it. It's just not possible.
Plus they moved around, right?
Well, they didn't really move around. I tracked them in the sky for about 45 minutes and more appeared. And then at the end of the 45 minute mark, they started disappearing one by one.
Okay.
Until they were all gone. And now when all there, it was at least, I would say, 30 to 40.
Wow.
It was a huge cluster in the sky. I couldn't even count them all.
Yeah.
But that really was the catalyst, because right after that, I went on the internet and I started looking for other people who may have seen what I saw. And though I didn't get a direct confirmation of that specific event, I did see several other similar type pictures and videos of what I had seen.
Mm-hmm.
And much, much more. Like I didn't realize there was so much going on in the world of ufology.
How long ago was this?
This was in 2007.
Okay, so it's not that long ago that your interest was
peaked. Yeah.
You know, what you're describing here, there have been several sightings of that type in Mexico.
Yeah. In Mexico, yeah. That's the bulk of the videos I saw were very similar, if not almost exact, like the Mexican videos that I've seen. Yes.
Right.
So, being just my character, the type of person I am, when I sort of discover something or go into something, I go full into it.
Mm-hmm.
If you've seen the movie Tropic Thunder, Simple Jack, the character plays Simple Jack, he goes full retard.
Yeah.
You know, and you never go full retard. Well, I go full retard. I go full retard in almost everything I do.
Well, that's good. You're going to do it. You're going to do it, you know?
Exactly, exactly. So in this short amount of time since 2007, I've really dove in deep into the extraterrestrial UFO phenomenon. And it started with talking to and interviewing people who are, have also had experiences, experiencers and abductees, really trying to put the pieces of the puzzle together. And we have so much information out there from great researchers like Richard Dolan and Stan Friedman and Linda Moulton Howe and, you know, all of these researchers that were brought together for the citizen hearing. There's just mountains and mountains of information in that sense, and cases and case files. And, you know, anybody who wants to find out more, the great thing is there is so much information. And the work that you're doing, you know, everybody is contributing to this massive body of evidence.
Right. Yeah.
The only problem is, you know, our mainstream scientists, governments don't tend to look at that evidence. It sort of like sits in its own little corner and its own classification. But it's not under lock and key. I tell people all the time, hey, you want to know more about this? There's everything you could possibly know about it.
Yeah. Well, yes and no on the mainstream science. Mainstream science tends to poo-poo the whole subject. On the other hand, covertly, 75%, so I've heard, 75% of mainstream science scientists accept the fact that, number one, we're not alone. Number two, we're being visited. But I say covertly because they're getting government grants.
Right.
And if they came out, number one, they'd probably lose their standing. You know, it's professional suicide. To come out with this, and they'd lose their government grants. So they keep it on the down low. But there are many mainstream scientists within MUFON, and they operate covertly.
And if you're, I'm sure you're familiar with Jacques Vallée and his work and the whole Invisible College that he speaks of in France and in Europe and throughout the world, really, there is this whole sort of underground research that's been going on for years, and it's growing, it's amping up.
That's right.
The mainstream is about to have a major wake up call. It's what I feel is coming from all of this underground research, so to say.
Well, that mock congressional hearing was certainly eye-opening for most people, especially the former congressman.
Oh, yeah.
They went in as, and most of them, I'm going to say all of them, went in as either total skeptics or sitting on the fence.
Right.
And they all came out and at least said, you know, this is worthy of a formal congressional hearing.
The only person that wasn't necessarily on the fence, that we didn't have to twist his arm, was Mike Gravel, Senator Gravel. He had seemed to be a bit more informed or researched into the subject matter than others. Now, and we sent all the Congress members' books and materials to sort of look over and look through before the hearings. And they all said that they did go through it, some more extensively than others, but they had sort of a basic concept, but they were blown away. All of them, as you can see watching the hearings, and I think that's one of the beautiful pieces of the parts of the hearings, is you see these well-educated government officials, former government officials, going through this realization, this process, and they're asking questions that any intelligent-minded person would ask, and they're getting the answers, you know, and you know, the witnesses, the researchers, all were, you know, selected. You know, Steve Bass did all the selecting on the of the committee, and or I should say the witnesses and the researchers, and put together a phenomenal team. So it really turned out, you know, it couldn't have been better. Really, yeah. It was just an amazing event, and it's all been recorded. And that's sort of my now go-to point. Anybody I meet in everyday life who sort of has questions and is like, well, what if they're real, then what's going on? You know, I don't know. And then I just turn to the citizen hearing as the ABCs, the 1, 2, 3s right. to ufologies.
Yeah. It used to be, look at the Disclosure Project, listen to the Disclosure right. Project witnesses, and yes. Which still is very good, but
yep.
now mock hearing, you know, what do we have? 32 hours of?
Over 30 hours of testimony.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's all available on Vimeo on demand, and we have DVD box sets now. It took quite a while to get them together, but we have them available.
Yeah,
we're working on with volunteers to get subtitles and transcripts done of the entire hearing, so we can get it into other languages, and that's just been a long process because. After the hearings, the funding was everything went into the hearings. There was no funding for anything
that was
else
it, huh?
afterwards. And though we had sort of put in a buffer to have a little extra to do these things, unfortunately, the hearings themselves went over budget
yeah.
and took every last penny that we yeah. possibly had.
Understand.
So it's been really a volunteer. group effort to get these DVDs out, to get the footage out on Vimeo, you know, and we're sort of recycling all the money that comes in to the DVD sales, and the Vimeo sales are now going back in to do the subtitles. We're still working on our documentary Truth Embargo,
mm-hmm.
which is sort of revolves around the hearings and revolves around some of the key witness cases, some of the cases and the witnesses and their involvement. So that's still in the works as well. Unfortunately, funding has just kept everything at a very slow pace. So yeah. it's all in the works.
Right.
And every DVD purchase, every Vimeo purchase goes to keep that machine going so we can get more stuff out.
Right. I need to take just a minute here. Half a minute to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. 30 years, we're just getting started. And that's 89.3 FM on your radio dial. And, of course, WHFR.FM on your computer. So, where you're listening to, we are not alone. I'm David Twitchell, and we're speaking with actor and martial art expert and filmmaker, Mr. Reuben Langdon. Reuben, let's talk about, for a minute, let's talk about your documentary, Interviews with ED, as opposed to ET.
Yes, it's actually a series right now on Vimeo. I'm releasing it through Vimeo On Demand.
Mm-hmm.
And the original intention was to do a documentary feature, but then as I was working on it, a lot of information was coming through that I thought was just too valuable to end up on the cutting room floor.
Yeah.
It happens in you know, in documentary films, mm-hmm. hours and hours and hours of footage is filmed, and then you end up with a two-hour piece.
Right.
So I have been releasing it episodically on Vimeo. I just released episode 7.
Mm-hmm.
And basically it's just me having a conversation with people who claim to channel extraterrestrials, or as the title says, extra dimensionals.
Mm-hmm.
And the process, my process of, you know, investigating the hardcore evidence, which is all presented in the citizen hearing, after the citizen hearing, I'm sort of this information junkie going, looking for the puzzle pieces, trying to put it all together. And mm-hmm. I sort of hit blocks as far as I could only go so far with the information. And I, after the hearings, I kept looking, and somebody mentioned this channeler, Bashar. And he said, yeah, it's an ET. It's this guy. He comes through, this other guy, and goes into a trance state, and he has some really profound things to say. And I said, oh, okay, how do you know that's true, and what's going on there? And this is all really crazy, weird, strange stuff. How do you, there's no tangible proof to any of that.
Right.
But I tuned in and I listened, and it made a lot of sense. What the guy was saying was correlating with a lot of the other research that I had done, especially with abductees and experiencers and sort of the things that they described. And I thought to myself, wow, this guy is, you know, just as versed, if not more versed, in the ufology world as some of the most hardcore, you know, detailed researchers, and then some. And then he would add all this extra stuff. And I'm like, where is he getting the information? So this journey, this new series was sort of to investigate this idea of channeling,
right.
this concept of what is channeling, as well as who are these beings that are coming through, and then getting an idea of what they have to say about what's going on here.
Right.
And very different world than the actual, you know, citizen hearing, tangible evidence, that sort of thing. However, like I said, the pieces of the puzzle are sort of fitting together with this journey. So the title itself, Interview with Ed, ED, originally it was going to be Interview with ET.
Mm.
But these beings themselves, several of us, after several interviews, they all told me that a more proper term for their existence would, though they are extraterrestrial, but they are extra dimensional. They all come from other dimensional planes of existence.
Okay.
Well,
that's always the question I ask my guests. Do you think they're extraterrestrial or other dimensional? I usually get a little bit of both, you know?
Yeah, and the way and the explanations from these interviews, and I won't go into any specific one, but sort of the clump body of evidence, including Bashar and everything he says, we've heard this concept from our mainstream scientists, but they sort of all say that time doesn't exist, not in the linear way that we perceive it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think even Einstein said this, time is relative, mm-hmm. relative to where you are and to everything else.
All right.
So having our sort of human concept of time, we see things in a linear sense. And yes, these extraterrestrials are linearly, if we were to travel out in the galaxy, we'd reach a planet. But for them, their time is very different than our time. And I think this is a great concept that's been explored recently in the movie Interstellar,
mm-hmm.
where it shows us viewers, the global population now, we can kind of get an idea that time really shifts from one planetary body, one star system, to the other star system, mm-hmm. based on, you know, the amount of gravity, the rotations around a specific star. So if one planet is rotating, depending on the size, you know, the days are different, you know, the number of hours,
mm-hmm.
the Earth hours that it travels around its sun, and seasons, and I mean everything is different.
Mm-hmm.
We base our idea, our definition of time, based on where we are at in our solar system with the number of revolutions around the sun and 24-hour cycles and But it differs everywhere. Everything is different. And, you know, there's great shows on Nova and the Science Channel and that have gone and said that even our satellites are, because of how far away they are from Earth, they're literally at a different time than we are. And wow. Astronauts who go out into space literally have a different clock that has to be readjusted because clocks, it doesn't work the same out there as it does here.
Right. But when it comes to the nuts and bolts UFOs and the abductions, I mean, we're dealing with, am I correct in saying, we're dealing with physical beings?
Yes. Now, they are physical, but on a different dimensional plane. The way, again, I'm just kind of regurgitating the information from my series.
Mm-hmm.
And my understanding of it now, after sort of getting this syllabus of, because the questions I ask, I get into a lot of physics and I'm really trying to understand the whole concept of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And you sort of have to really open your mind and look into, I think I've, since doing this series, I've really started going into quantum physics and, quantum entanglement, singularity, all these different string theory, all these different sort of higher scientific terms actually are very relative to what is being discussed and talked about in my series.
Okay.
And the idea of the physical body, yes, they do have physical structure and physical bodies, but they're at a different dimensional plane and different density plane. And this whole concept of densities and dimensions is something I really explored in my latest episode to form the terminology.
Mm-hmm.
But things that are at a different vibratory rate. Now, this is something scientists are just starting to sort of get into, but in different dimensions, you have different densities of objects and of things.
Okay.
And it's sort of described that we're actually not in the third dimension, we're in the fourth dimension, and Einstein and others have discussed this, of up, down, left, right.
Mm-hmm. Fourth dimension being time.
Correct. Yeah. Space-time,
right.
Which is intertwined. Space and time are sort of one. You can't have one without the other.
All right. If you can bend one, you can bend the other.
Right. So so that in this fourth dimensional plane, we have what's known, and this is where it starts to get a little woo-woo. Scientists haven't really gone deep into this, but spiritual teachings go into this, where we go into the term densities, and this correlates with the chakra systems. So we have sort of all of the ancient mystics and different cultures talk about seven chakras, and they correlate them with different colors. So the lower chakras being red, orange, and yellow, going up to the higher chakras with using colors of blue, light blue, indigo, and white. So there's these different chakras have different densities to them.
Mm-hmm.
And these beings say that we're sort of in third density, fourth density. We're sort of third density consciousness moving into fourth density consciousness.
And how many levels?
If we correlate that with our chakras, we're moving from our sort of our gut chakra up to our heart chakra, which is represented in all these different cultures with the color green.
Mm-hmm. And how many levels do they claim there are? I mean, we're third, moving to fourth, or in fourth. How many levels are there? Just no end to them?
In a physical plane, they're sort of is seven densities or six densities. And then once you go into the seventh density consciousness, which is sort of, again, separate from dimensions. You can still have different dimensional planes, but just focusing on the densities right now, they say once we get out of sixth density consciousness, there is no physical form, physical body that we're sort of used to.
Right.
So these higher density, higher dimensional beings that are doing the abductions and visiting and doing all this stuff that we can physically see with our eyes are still within this sixth density zone, probably a higher density consciousness than what we are at third, fourth. There would be more like fifth or sixth coming from different dimensional planes and able to exist here in a physical form that we can see them with our eyes. But this, having this sort of belief system, this knowledge, sort of explains a lot of the phenomenon where several people see a craft, but other people don't see the craft.
Right, at the same time, right?
And that's, you know, there's many cases where that's happened. Mm-hmm. And then it's questioned, why do some people see the craft, but why do others? And this is sort of this density level where these crafts can exist in our dimension, but at a different density. Therefore, they're not visible to everybody. You know, you have to sort of be at a certain vibratory rate.
Right.
It's almost like a cloaking device in sense, where if you they exist, they're there, but they're not visible to our eyes or even our other instruments, our other technology.
Possibly in the infrared or ultraviolet spectrum.
Sometimes they are, though, you know, in that spectrum. But like on radar, they may not show up on radar. But if anybody who's played with night vision goggles and gone out, look at skywatching, you see things with these goggles that you can't see with the naked eye.
That's what I'm talking about, yeah.
Yeah, sometimes, not all the time, obviously. But and that's...
According to these channelers, we're talking, going back to the nuts and bolts in the physical ETs or slash EDs, what is the purpose of the abduction phenomena?
Well, the consensus, and this is where things get wild, because, you know, these different beings, these different channelers, you would think that they all have different things to say. But there's a terminology that may be a little bit different, but the actual, what they're saying is, it correlates across the board. And I've been across the country interviewing different channelers who have different, you know, different belief systems, different things. They're not all talking to each other. Some of them do, but this journey has been phenomenal because I'm finding that there's so many different people in different areas, but the information is the same. And sort of the general consensus may vary slightly from person to person or channeler to channeler, but the general consensus is this idea of abduction, particularly with the grays, which our mainstream researchers have done a lot of research on, with the grays from the Zeta Reticuli. Their race was sort of dying off, and they... in order to continue their existence and to evolve, they needed human DNA.
Okay.
And that was this program that was sort of set up, this galactic program even, you know, other ETs assisted, it seems, to take human DNA, mix it with theirs, create new hybrid races. And reason being, the whole sort of covert, keeping it on the down low, is they didn't want to interrupt the human experience of what we're doing right now, living day-to-day life, going through our, emotions and processing and doing all this stuff on a day-to-day basis, you know, drinking our coffee and going to work, that. They tried to, with technology, and again, like I said, help with other extra dimensionals or ETs, they would take us at night and take our DNA and take eggs and sperm and concoct a new version of
new hybrid
bean.
Yeah.
A hybrid bean.
I chuckled. And, I chuckled because I've written my last book was a novel, science fiction, kind of UFO phenomenon from aliens' point of view, and that is the basis for what they're doing.
You know, before hearing this story from them, I had interviewed many abductees, and they all sort of, some of them had very traumatic experiences. They thought it was no good and it was evil, and some people even had this demonic take on it. But then you hear this other perspective that this ET race, this Zeta Reticuli race, had their perspective was they didn't have the emotional spectrum that humans have. They were sort of engineered, genetically engineered emotions out of their system in order for them to have a different experience on the planet or whatever it is. But at one time they did have an emotional spectrum. and their DNA structure was very similar to the human DNA structure, and that's why we're such a genetic match for them, and why this agreement, this thing happened at this moment in time, and their evolution and ours was sort of agreed upon on a higher dimensional plane. This is going out of the Earth realms into the term that was. Has been given a lot of times is a soul contract.
Right.
And this sort of baffled me originally when I heard this. I was like, what do you mean, a soul contract? Wow, I never heard that perspective. So I start asking them, and they said, on a soul level, all of us sort of incarnate into this third dimensional or third density existence. And before we incarnate here on a soul level, it's agreed upon that we are going to share our DNA with these other beings. On this, when we're incarnated in this third density existence, we sort of don't have the memories. We don't have the connection.
Well, no.
Some of us do, you know, the psychic intuitives and all this, these other channelers and stuff are sort of remembering the story. But all of this abduction stuff, as traumatic as it has been for some people, and then you talk to them and they're like, I would never choose this in a million years. You're crazy. Some of these experiences.
I'm certain it's different when you're in spirit, right? It's different than
sort of like in the dream state. You're not.
Right.
Oh yeah, that sounds.
It sounds like a good idea. I need to take one more break here, just to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves, 89.3 FM on your radio dial. And you're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm David Twitchell, and we're speaking with actor and filmmaker and ufologist, really, Mr. Reuben Langdon. Am I correct
in
saying ufologist?
That's it. Yeah, I would. I can own that title now, I think.
For sure.
Much work as I've been doing.
Yeah. I had a friend who passed away a while back here, David Kaywood. And he was an abductee or experiencer, and he called himself an experiencer because he said that abductee meant you're being taken against your will. But as soon as he said, I accept what's going on, let's get with it now, then he became an experiencer. Well, the point of it is he at one point said to his abductors, and he remembered his abductions consciously. He said to his abductors, who gave you the right to take me like this? And they said, you did. He said, what are you talking about? And they showed him, before he was born in this physical world, a scene where he was in their presence, agreeing to come to Earth and be taken for this purpose. So it all makes sense.
Matches, doesn't it?
It does.
That was what, you know, my conclusion, having interviewed and, you know, people like you just described, having very similar experiences, mm-hmm. and then sort of correlating that information with the information that these channelers are given, mm-hmm. giving these channels mm-hmm. from these different races, everything starts to match up. And it's as crazy as it sounds, and we don't have the physical, tangible evidence to prove what these channelers are saying directly. But if you look at the collective testimony, if you look at the collective evidence that we do have, mm-hmm. it all correlates so beautifully that the only conclusion, is it Einstein that said this? You know, if all the evidence is there, you sort of have to accept what the most logical explanation
That's
is.
That's it. You know, it's like the UFO phenomenon itself. One person says, you know, I saw this disc-shaped craft. You're probably crazy. But you got a million people saying the same thing. Well, there's got to be something behind it, right?
Right. The Phoenix Lights, you know, look at that case.
Right.
You know, tens of thousands of people having this experience. So the whole city of Phoenix, should they go into a sane asylum?
including the governor.
Including the governor. Yeah. Got on 60 Minutes and said, hey, you know, I saw it too, and I didn't know what to say.
So I made a joke of it, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And that's
really, I think, what all this is about with my research, with my work, mm. is I'm trying to put a story out there, tell a different story, and let people resonate or connect with it and feel okay to talk about these experiences. So to do this interview right now, to be able to discuss things openly and have a forum where we can sort of say, hey, what's really going on here?
That's right. That's right.
And that's...
Well, it's like the radio show itself. This one radio show is not going to do the trick, okay?
No.
But put them all together, the coast to coast and all of these different radio shows, all of the different venues and platforms and forums, put them together, and what do you have?
Exactly.
You know?
And it's a beautiful thing. When I hear these stories and get sort of this grander puzzle putting it together, it's amazing. I mean, it's better than the best science fiction we have. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. You can't make up better.
According to those that you've interviewed, what would you say is ET's or ED's ultimate agenda?
Well, this is an interesting sort of perspective that I got recently from some recent interviews that I haven't published yet.
Okay.
But so there's many different races. There's many different archetypes. You know, we've all heard the terms, the Pleiades and the Zeta Reticuli, the Greys, and, you know, the Draconian reptilians, and the, you know, even some people talk about mantis beings. And it seems to be so many people having all these different experiences, but yet several people have claimed to have several of the same experiences. So the ones that I just discussed, a lot of people have had interactions with these, I'll call them ET archetypes. And sort of the grand picture, the big picture of what's going on is creation, really. Giving birth to new forms, new life forms, and new energies and new archetypes. Mm-hmm. And when you take one archetype and you mix it with another, you get something new. You get something else that comes out. And the human experiment, in terms that they even use, mm-hmm. the human experiment is a mixed match of all these different archetypes. Mm-hmm. And we're sort of given free will, so to say, by the universal, you know, all that there is this God or even these higher dimensional entities, sort of all agree that the human experience is one that needs to not be manipulated or be guided, but ultimately in the experience, we're supposed to have free will. We're supposed to choose on a day-to-day basis what we want to do. But we've been given all of this archetypal DNA and multidimensional energies, and all this stuff is just here in our realm to sort of play with and to discover and to create.
Right. We're procreators.
We're procreators, yes.
Procreators, and on a grander scale than this is procreation on a grander scale than we humans have ever known, correct?
Yes, and by observing, so these other higher dimensional, other archetypes can observe the mix match of our archetypes mixing and molding and creating what we're creating here on Earth, they can then apply the lessons learned. They can apply the discoveries, the emotions to their realms, to their worlds. So there's a lot of eyes on our Earth right now, and how we the choices we make.
There's a lot of what?
There's a lot of eyes, I should say. When I say eyes, a lot of going back to this archetypal different extra-dimensional, extraterrestrial.
Okay.
One of the reasons why they're all here, so many different races and so many different beings, and we have record of all these different experiences from these different people, is they're sort of watching us because we're the grand show in the galaxy because of all of the mix-match of archetypes of other extraterrestrial, extra-dimensional energies, and then our choices we make with this sort of operating system of archetypes fascinates them, and that's why they're able to then use this the information of us, of our experiences, and apply it back home, back to where they're at, so they can go and create more things or do things in a different way that they haven't done before.
When you look at
as vague as that is, that seems to be the consensus sort of story of why all of this is happening.
But when you look at the big picture and you look at all these archetypes, are we humans on Earth, are we Earthlings really that important? In the grand scheme of things, are we that important?
When you look at all of these, when you look at all of these architects and you look at all this activity around Earth, it appears that we are very important. It appears that there's, when you look, now our scientists are saying, you look out into the galaxy and our galaxies and our universe is teeming with life. There's so many different potential planets and all these stars and Goldilocks zones and everything else. But in our ETs even say, the life is so vast and so infinite in so many ways that we couldn't even imagine. But yet the Earth itself is a unique experiment, a unique place of archetypal energies, I guess, and a unique mix match.
Right.
And it is important, it's important to these other beings who are, here assisting, helping, mixing, putting in their own two cents.
So to speak. But don't you think the same type of thing, the same type of experimentation, abductions, whatever, the same type of thing is going on all over the universe in different areas, and they are in some planet out there. Now they're the important ones to these ETs. So
absolutely.
And they're just as important. They're just as important to their experimentation as we are to the experimentation of the ETs that we're experiencing. Am I correct?
Absolutely. I would say that one of the terms that I've heard from the ETs, and they say this on an individual level for people, you know, for people, but I think this goes for planets as well, and is that no one person is special.
Right.
Like we're all special. Yeah. However, everyone is unique. Hmm. So there's a difference between special and unique. So being more special, meaning putting something above something else. You know, no one person is above anybody else. And I would say in the galaxy, it seems like we could apply this to our planet. Mm. No, our planet is not above any other planetary body or solar system, but it is uniquely, Earth is a very unique planetary body in our solar system.
So
just
we're
like every human individual is unique in its own, in their own.
So every individual is unique, but we are special as a group unit, correct?
Well, I'm even steering away from the word special because our idea of special means that it sort of has a hierarchy. It's greater than something else, where their perspective that they like to share with us is that nothing is really special.
Well,
meaning in the sense that it's higher or greater
right.
or lesser than.
But special to their purpose, or they wouldn't be here.
Yes, yeah, special to the purpose, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
And I think in that sense, for sure.
Yeah. Very good. So, not to get off the subject, but what other movie projects do you have in the works right now? Anything?
Well, I've been doing. I sort of live back and forth between LA and Atlanta now, and Atlanta's been a hot spot for film of late. The tax credits there have drawn the big studios in to do a lot of film work. So I do a lot of stunt work and acting on a smaller scale, you know, day player stuff. So I've been working on a few projects. I worked on the latest Divergence film, Divergence series. I have a small little stunt role. And I think they're Allegiance.
Okay.
Is the next film. And you know, I, as a day player in the stunt world and acting world, I show up in a lot of films and TV shows, but really small, just quick, like a one liner. And then I get killed or I'm killing somebody else or
You're the expendable actor.
I'm the expendable actor, and I guess I do a good job at it because they keep calling me back. And
you're the one that would show up on Star Trek, and
red shirt. I've been in red shirt a few times actually. In fact, I make this claim. Others are welcome to dispute it, and I can't prove it, but I make the claim that I have probably earned the Guinness Book World Record for the most number of deaths performed by an individual. And I say this not just because of my work in the film industry, but in the motion capture video game world, we have to perform deaths in so many ways. Like in one day, I will die 100 times because how video games work, you have to sort of perform every possible way to die and fall.
Right.
And being different characters.
Right.
So I would, you know, get shot in the head from the front, get shot in the head from the left, get shot in the head from the back, get shot in the head, you know, and then as a character in each. Right. And then I would do the same thing as a different character.
Right.
And then I would get, you know, shot in the butt. And then I would get shot by an arrow. And then I would get shot by a machine gun or get blown up by a grenade. You know, so many different possibilities, and I've performed them all. I've done, it's sort of my day job is dying.
Is dying. And where can our listeners go to find out more about your work and the documentaries or, you know, on ED?
Well, definitely the citizenhearing.org for all of the work with the Citizen Hearing, the 30-plus hours of footage. as well as updates. There's the work hasn't stopped there. We're still working on the documentary, and researchers involved in the citizen hearing are continuing to break new stories, and we put those up on our website.
The website is
citizenhearing.org. One word, citizenhearing.org. And then the other website I have for my series that I'm working on is Interview with Ed. It's right now it's just a Facebook page as well as the Vimeo page. And it's Interview with Ed, one word. So Vimeo/interview with Ed. And then also the Facebook page, if you just go to Facebook, Interview with Ed, one word, no spaces. And then my personal website, which I'm in the process of revamping to include a lot of my ufology research and other projects, which right now it's just me as an actor, is RubenLangdon.com. That's just my first name, last name, one word, .com.
Ruben Langdon, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And best of luck. Thank you for joining me. And if you have any questions or comments for me, you can email me at dtwitchell@hotmail.com. And this show, as well as all the forum shows, is now archived at whfr.fm's website. Click on Talk Shows on the homepage, then Tuesday Forum. And We Are Not Alone is also archived at my website, which is ufoimplications.com. That's ufoimplications.com. So stay tuned to WHFR.FM, the station making waves for the best in alternative programming. I want to thank you for joining us today. Please join us again the first Tuesday of each month at 1 p.m. when we will again explore the mysteries of the UFO phenomena. Until then, this is David Twitchell reminding you to keep an eye on the sky. You're listening to WHFI Dearborn. Yo, guys and dolls, you are at the Malt Shop with Daddy G here on WHFI. And we're going back to the 50s and the 60s today. So hang those fuzzy dice on the rearview mirror, grab your favorite squeeze, and head on down to the Malt Shop where the jukebox is playing and the kids are dancing. And here we are, back in the 50s.
Hello, baby.